What is up, plant people? It's Tuesday, October 13th, 2020, and we're back with another episode of the Planthropology Podcast, the show where we dive into the lives, careers, ambitions, and attitudes of some really cool plant people to figure out why they do what they do and what keeps them coming back for more. I'm your host, Vikram Baliga, and I'm thrilled to be with you today. As always, got a great one for you today. It's a little bit different. You may have heard me talk about our plant partner, Pecan Ridge, over the past few weeks. And it turns out that my guests today are actually two of the folks from Pecan Ridge, Chris Baldock, the owner, and Dylan Moore, who handles a lot of their sales and marketing. It was really an interesting episode. We talked about a little bit of everything from academia and education to local businesses, growing pecan trees, and the right way to pronounce pecan, which is pecan, all you pecan people out there. But it's really just a lot of fun. It's a very positive and hopeful episode, and I think you're going to love it. So we'll jump into some housekeeping real quick. Again, our partners are Pecan Ridge at PecanRidge.com. You can buy all kinds of great local stuff, goodies for the holidays. And if you use the promo code PLANTPEOPLE at checkout, all lowercase, all one word, you'll get 10% off your order. Also, check out LocalLBK.com. LocalLBK is a great organization that supports local businesses in our area. If you're ever in Lubbock or ever around Lubbock, or if you live here, for $5 a month, you can get a great membership card that gets you discounts and special deals all over town. So check out the links for Pecan Ridge and for LocalLBK in the show notes and go check them out. It's well worth your $5 a month. Be sure to stick around through the end of the episode because we have a trailer today for the Curiosity Cake podcast, which is a lot of fun. It covers a variety of topics. If there's things that you're curious about, there's a pretty good chance that Curiosity Cake will cover it at some point. So make sure that you stick around for that and just go give them a listen and dive into that show. I've had a lot of fun listening to it, and I think you will as well. Other things, go check us out on social media. We are Planthropology on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We've got a great Facebook group called Planthropology's Cool Plant People. I'm on TikTok now as the Plant Prof because I'm all out of self-respect these days. I just post silly little plant videos, plant information, and things like that. It's fun. I have fun doing it. I'm way too old to be on there, but that's okay. Yeah, that's all I got. Rate, review. If you want to drop a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen, I would sure appreciate it. But aside from that, I'm just going to jump into today's episode. Again, Chris and Dylan are really good guys. I had a lot of fun talking to them. The audio quality is a little bit different on this one because we sat out in the garden. It was a beautiful fall day. I took all my equipment out there and we sat here at the Texas Tech Horticulture Gardens just under some trees. And so there's some wind noise and the occasional car and birds chirping. And I'm not sorry because it was a beautiful day and I just wanted to sit out there to record. But anyway, I hope you are ready for a really fun, lighthearted, and I think meaningful and uplifting episode. So grab a drink, put on your headphones, turn on your car radio, and get ready for a great episode of the Planthropology Podcast with Chris Baldock and Dylan Moore. All right, well, we are here for another episode of Planthropology, and I'm super excited about our guests today. You've heard me talk about their business more than once on the show. They're actually one of our kind of partners for the show, Pecan Ridge. So I'm here with Chris and Dylan from Pecan Ridge, and I was super excited to get to talk to them because going into the holiday season and everything, they're big on pecans, food, holiday treats, gifts, and everything and anything that has to do with, I would say, September onwards in the world. And so I thought it'd be cool to talk about, you know, pecan trees, about the business, and just about these guys. So how are y'all doing today?
I'm fantastic. I mean, Can you not be fantastic when you're sitting out here? This is beautiful.
Yeah, we're actually recording outside today. It was a beautiful day. There's no wind. There's a ton of stuff going on in the greenhouse. So we decided, well, come sit out at a picnic bench in the horticulture garden, and it's a nice day.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. And thank you for having us. We're really looking forward to this. And we both like to talk, so we might let you get in a word edgewise. Maybe not, though.
You know, that makes my job easy. The more y'all want to carry the conversation, that makes my job very easy. So why don't y'all introduce yourselves a little more, and whoever wants to start, just tell us about, you know, your background, how you got into the pecan business, and then we'll talk about the business itself a little more later.
Okay. Well, I'm Chris Baldock, and I'm the owner of Pecan Ridge. Purchased it 2 years ago this coming December, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Was it? December 27, yeah. 2018.
I can't even remember. But right. What kind of how I got into it is I was actually looking for a teaching job. The business I had done before this kind of had some problems. So, and I had been a professor in Scotland years and years ago. So I was looking for a business to purchase here in Lubbock. I grew up with pecan trees. My family owns pecan orchards in New Mexico, and we actually used Pecan Ridge to shell our pecans from our orchards. And by chance, John Job was the old owner, and I talked to him, and it had been for sale for about a year, I think about a year or two.
Yeah.
And so we got together and started talking, and the rest is history, and I bought it, and we're off and running with Pecan Ridge.
Okay.
So that's my very basic background of how I got into Pecan Ridge, but it was kind of almost an accident how I got into it. Thrilled that I did, but it was kind of a little bit of accident when we got into it.
Yeah, same for me. My name is Dylan. I'm the sales director at Pecan Ridge. I actually tell people I almost didn't take the job when Chris asked, because I was like, do I really want to make pecans the next 20 years of my life? Do I want to be the pecan guy? Like, is that going to be me?
You are the pecan guy.
You are the pecan guy. Yes. But I'm so glad I did, because... Wow. Pecan Ridge has blessed us with so many opportunities I think we never originally thought of, that it has been really, really cool to see play out.
That's awesome.
And it's not just the pecans, but Dylan has taken the store, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little later.
Yeah.
It was a tiny little, maybe 500 square foot little store. And we've turned that into, I haven't done much. He's turned that into a,
he's modest.
He's turned that into a nice store, and we really like working with the community. So it's not only the farming aspect, the agricultural aspect of it, but also just the community part of it, it wasn't a big deal with Pecan Ridge. They were involved, but Dylan's really taking it to another level, as most people know that hear this.
Yeah. And we've talked about, I think I come up with a different weird plug for the business every episode.
I love them, man. They're
just
awesome.
Just off the top of my head every time. But the Pecan Ridge is, shelling, gifts, mm-hmm. pecan products. And mm-hmm. But it's not just that, right? It's turned into mm-hmm. a showcase for local businesses and just a big part of the community, which is just really cool to see.
Yeah, we really tried it. Well, Dylan has, and I'll let him talk about it, but we work a lot with Meals on Wheels, several other charities here. And it's just something we wanted to continue because the Jobs had started that and we wanted to continue it. And Dylan has taken it to another level, which is good for us and good for the community. And it's not just about all making money and making pecans. It's about doing other things as well with the community. And I believe in that strongly. And I know Dylan does, too. I think that's why we work well together, because we kind of have the same type of vision for the business, not only good in agriculture and our, with our trees, but also in how we deal with our customers, you know, what we sell. Trying to promote local businesses as well, and Texas Tech as well. You know, we want to be involved as much as we can with Tech. It's a great school and does a lot for our community.
Oh, yeah. Well, and y'all are for sure. So, Chris, you said that you were a professor in Scotland. I'm not going to let that one get away.
He taught in a castle, man.
You
can't let that one go.
No, we got to talk about that a little bit more. What did you teach?
I taught church history.
Okay.
And history. And, you know, there's a lot of, I'm an Orthodox Presbyterian. So that's kind of our going, that's our Israel, I guess you would say. Write in for that. That's kind of our go home place. And I was able to teach at the University of the Highlands and the Islands in way northern Scotland. Froze for a few years, but it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Couldn't afford living there anymore is the main reason why I came back.
Okay.
It's unbelievably expensive, but what a wonderful opportunity for me, and the people of Scotland are just fantastic.
That's really cool.
The pictures I've seen are just like incredible. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I've never been. I would love to go see the British Isles, but like, same thing. Pictures I've seen of Scotland. I'm like, how come I can't? I want to be there. like I love Lubbock. I really do. Yeah. And I get my own little piece of, you know, garden and stuff here, but it's different. It's not the same.
It is a different world. And, culturally, it's just, you know, we all speak the same language, kind of. It took me a while to get used to, and they still speak Gaelic a lot in northern Scotland. They teach it in the schools, in grade schools, so it was a dying language. And the Scottish have really gone out of their way to resurrect that, and students are learning it. I tried. It is the most difficult. I've taken Russian. That was my first major in college, and it was more difficult than Russian, I can tell you that.
Wow. Yeah, so that's quite the, you know, wow. You know, that's you know, it's interesting to get that piece of the story. And Dylan, I want to hear a little bit about your background a little bit more in a sec. But we talk a lot about on the show the different paths people take to get where they are. That's like a big talking point because, you know, I may be a rare case where I stuck with the same degree all the way through three times. And then I'm like, oh, I'm still doing it. Like this is but I think anymore, that's maybe not the case. People find opportunities all over the place. And so, you know, to start with studying Russian and then going into history and then all this stuff.
You never know where it's going to say. I have 3 degrees in philosophy, history, and church history, and I'm doing nothing with any of them. But I'm having a lot more fun now. I take that back. I'm not doing anything with them, but I am. I enjoyed every minute of it. And you never know. You have to be open to where, you know, if you were a believer, to where God takes you or the universe takes you or whatever that is, you have to be able at least to look at it. A lot of people are so, I think, kind of also in academia, we're kind of scared to get out of our little box and go do anything. My family were shocked that I wanted to do this because I love academia. I love academics and I love studying and teaching. But this is just something that popped up and I was really excited about it. And it's been worth it so. Don't limit yourself, basically, is what I'm trying to say, to wherever, you know, you want to go.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent advice to anyone out there listening at any point in their lives.
Yeah, it really is.
Don't close yourself off to opportunities.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
100% yes.
So you said you didn't know if you wanted to take the sales director job because you didn't know if you wanted to do pecans for the rest of your life. What other things had you done before that? Where were you headed when pecans kind of fell into your lap?
Well, actually, so I had studied political science in college, but I only made it through 2 years because honestly, the college scene was just not for me.
Sure.
Like, you know, it didn't work out for me. So I was kind of doing odd jobs here and there. And I was actually doing front desk at a hotel here locally. And I took one of Chris's church history classes.
Okay.
And he just randomly kind of emailed me one day and was like, hey, I don't even know if this is your email, but I know kind of like your history and like what you kind of want to do in life. I have this store and I'm looking for someone to kind of like do this, this, and this. Is this something you're interested in?
Okay.
And like I said, I almost said no because I was like, not for me. But he said he talked more about his vision for Pecan Ridge and what he had planned, different ways we could help the community. And I really bought into that. I really thought it was.
Well, he's stretching it a little. I kind of begged him to come to work for me. And I don't want to, you know, I want to give credit where credit's due. Dylan's really the one that had the vision for the store and doing the stuff within the community. I'm more of a academic type, so he forces me to come do these things, which I appreciate. But it's a good balance of I'm a little more introverted than he is, and he's quite a bit extroverted.
I hadn't noticed.
Yeah,
at all.
So that it helped. It helps the business. I think it helps both of us mentally with the business. You know, we've had struggling times, but we've been able to get through it. And so I don't want Dylan to undercut himself. And it really was his vision taking Pecan Ridge to where it is now as far as community-wise, growing it with I never would have thought of having local vendors come to the store and put stuff. I really wouldn't. That was all of his vision. So I do want to give him credit where credit is due.
Well, and you know, I'll kind of echo that because I've known Dylan for not too long, maybe a year, a little over
almost a year
now.
Maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. And just like you know, especially kind of hearing that this was not like your plan to go into con business. Like you've done such a great job of community organizing of, you know, and we'll talk more about a few of the specifics about this, but like from working with farmers markets to working with these local vendors, even though you're not quote unquote a plant person, you have planted yourself squarely in this industry in Lubbock. Yep. And I think that, you know, on a previous episode with Carrie Mayfield, Dr. Mayfield, we talked about, he's a great guy. Yes. Great guy. We talked about the Wolfworth Farmers Market
and how such a blessing.
You're super involved out there too. And you do a lot. I always am excited to pull up Facebook every day and see like, all right, I'm going to be honest. You kind of make me sleepy some days because I'm like, he's in 8 places right now. Honey. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, again, I love what y'all have done with the business and with the store and just, you know, I'm all about community and I'm all about how do we build better community both in academia and in science, but also just at large and in business and all that. So I think that's really cool.
Well, we tend to get, you know, we get tribalistic, I think. And I think that's natural for humans to do that. But, you know, the agriculture people in Lubbock or anywhere, really, you know, they kind of stick together. If you're a college town like this is, the academic, they kind of stick together. Not always, but kind of as a general rule. And the community people kind of stick together. And Dylan's done a good job of kind of overcoming all that and really blending in with everybody. And that's what I want to do with my business as well. Keep it apolitical, but grow the business, you know, grow our community and that kind of stuff. And I think he's done a really good job and so have our other employees. They're really involved in all that as well.
We have a fantastic team, which really, really helps.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can't, it's amazing. You know, I've run a couple of small businesses over the years and you cannot overstate, and even just here now, honestly, with my student assistants, like you can't overstate the power that a good team of people that get along, that can work well together, like really the power that has in building a business or building any kind of whether it be a research program or managing a garden like this. Like I couldn't do this without my staff for sure. Like in fact, this year kind of proved that. Because we were in lockdown and I was the only one up here and this place looked like crap.
Well, it looks all right.
You're like, okay.
It looks pretty good now.
And so, you know, when my staff came back, I was like, oh, thank God. Thank God. And so we kind of got some stuff put back together.
And it helps for the motivation factor. Like when you're surrounded by a great team, it really is just hard to suck because you're just like thriving on all this like really great energy. And you're like, no, I can do this too. I'm going to make this happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And just, yeah, the overall morale of working with people you like. And again, I think this is important. You know, so one of our audiences for this is scientists, just general public, plant nerds, but also students. We like to try to talk to our students and to our, I don't even want to say students, but like our young people. I'm not a young people anymore, really. I'm
really there.
You know, into my 30s. I'm not an old people yet, but I'm, you know, kind of in that middle weird spot where our freshmen that come in, we're born in 2002, and I'm like,
I know, right?
This is really,
like, this is crazy. This is happening.
Really upsetting.
I don't remember what I was doing in 2002.
And so, but no, the if you're listening to this, I think something that you should kind of maybe keep running in your brain is how do you build yourself a good team? How do you surround yourself with people that I don't even want to say like-minded people, because I think sometimes we benefit from people that think different. Right. Not sometimes. We do benefit from people that think a little differently than us and the ability to have conversations 100%. About that kind of stuff. So I'll ask y'all that, you know, you're in business. Mm-hmm. How have you gone about assembling a team that really works well together?
That's a good question. When I took over, you know, we kept all the employees and to be honest, they lasted, I think, about two or three months.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was important to keep that continuity between the old and the new at the time. But a lot, and it happens in a lot of business when a new owner takes over. I didn't change anything, but personalities get in the way as sometimes. And, you know, we had a little problem. So I had to make some tough decisions and had to bring in more people. The people that work for me now, almost all of them, I think, except for one or two, have worked for me in the past. They knew how I worked.
Yeah.
I also try to assemble a team of people that know how to think. And I know that you're, well, what does that mean? Well, I'm not a micromanager. I like to give people, like, we'll use Dylan as an example, you know, this is what I want to do, a market or something, and let him go and figure it out for himself. Sure. I don't have the time or the energy, or even though I don't even want to do his job or the sheller or my plant manager, or, you know, I give them a lot of leeway. And, you know, and there's also accountability. If something goes wrong, they are accountable to me for it. But you have to let people grow and you have to let people make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Dylan's made them. I've made a lot. Our other employees have. And you grow from those. You don't, you know, overreact from the mistakes. You just grow from them.
Right.
And I think that's key. And just allowing people to voice their opinion, I think, in business is important. We're a small business. We all get to know each other very, very well.
Yes.
You know, when you spend 8 hours a day together, you get to know them really well. And you learn to value what they have to say. Everybody has something to offer a business.
Yeah.
Now, none of them go in guns blazing and trying to tell me how to run my business. But,
that's good.
Yeah, that's all. But after time, you learn, you know, they come to respect me. I come to respect them. I think respect's earned. And then I'm more free with, you know, allowing Dylan more freedom and the other employees more freedom to do what they think they need to do with the business. And it's worked out pretty well so far.
Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of how I run the business. I'm not like I said, I'm not a micromanager at all. But I do expect people to do their jobs.
Yeah, sure.
And they've all taken it and run with it and have been really successful at it.
Yeah, I've actually learned a lot from Chris's managerial style. I've kind of broken it down. I think his managerial style is like three basic parts, ownership, servant, leadership. I mean, ownership, like he says, he wants you to take care of your problems. He wants you to own your problems and like figure it out for yourself. He's not going to micromanage you and say, okay, these are the steps to like get out of your problem. Like, you know, you're going to figure that out.
And I don't mean to cut you off. One of the big things that I do is I try to empower all the employees, Dylan, or even our counter people. They have the responsibility to fix whatever the problem is. If a customer's upset, they don't have to call me. They don't have to call Dylan. You know, nothing makes customers matter than if there's a problem and it takes 45 minutes or 45 days to get it resolved.
It's very freeing.
So if they believe that the person should get whatever it is for free, give it to them. Fix the problem at the time. Don't make people matter before they go.
Sure.
And they've done, we haven't had one problem with a employee or somebody like over giving somebody too much attention or giving them the product for free if they needed to. And it's worked really well. And I mean, you can't do that in every business, but I think in a lot of businesses, if owners would empower their employees with a little more responsibility in some of these things, it would help tremendously with customer service. I really think that. And Dylan is the customer service expert, let me tell you. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, Dylan.
I totally agree with everything you said. With everything you said with ownership, the servant leadership, you know, he doesn't just tell you like, okay, these are the things that need to get done. He asks you where you want to go in life. So like, what goals do you have for yourself and how does Pecan Ridge fit into those goals and how can we help you reach those goals? That is something that was truly fascinating when I started working with Chris and something that I hope to bring into, you know, whatever I do in the future, I really hope to bring into that. And then the third one is entrepreneurship, exactly what he was saying. He really strives to have people voice their opinions and come up with ideas and really make sure that everyone is on the same boat and making Pecan Ridge not only a better place, but the best place. And that is really awe-inspiring.
I think what he's talking about, we had, when I first took over, we had two really young men that had been working there since they were 14 or 15. They were the two main shellers. That was their job. They were paid very well for 21 and 22, I think, something like that. And brilliant young men, loved both of those guys. And my biggest concern was, you know, what are they going to be doing in 15 years?
Sure.
Are they still going to be here shelling? I would love it because they really knew what they were doing, but I saw something, and I'm not patting myself on the back. It's just something that I noticed, and I think being a teacher helps that too. I saw something in them, and it's like, I don't want them here in 15 years shelling my pecans. I want them to go to, and both of them have gone to do something else now, and hopefully they will expand their knowledge. They were making a lot of money for what they were doing at their age, and it was difficult for them to leave, but they did. And, you know, I wish them the best of luck. And to me, that's important. You know, what am I going to do to grow myself, you know, to change and to become a better person, better employee, better whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. I didn't want them stuck at Pecan Ridge. Not that we're stuck there. I hope this makes sense. But as young men, if they wanted to go to college, or one of them loved welding, I encouraged them to go into welding or go to welding school. You know, they make a lot of money. And they both have done that. And I'm happy for them. I'm thrilled. Now, it kind of sucked for me because I had to learn how to do the shelling and I've had to hire more people.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I don't mind. That's, I'd like them to see as a stepping stone with these younger people, because we have tech students working for us now.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, they learn how to work in a business, you know, how to work with employees and how to work with a boss, and hopefully then graduate and go do something else, or, you know, buy it, open their own pecan place, something like that.
You know, I think y'all both made an interesting point there, and you were talking about some of Chris's leadership styles, and he said something that said maybe it's because I'm a teacher, and mm-hmm. that may be part of it, because I think, you know, I think the people that do the best in life, and I don't necessarily mean just in terms of, like, the weird kind of gross definition we have of success sometimes as a society, but just like the people that end up happy and like fulfilled, and yeah, the monetary success is important too, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a business guy too, but I think where the people that end up in those places where the happiest are the ones that are lifetime learners. Yeah. And I think when you find a manager, you find a leader who's also willing to teach along the way and also mm-hmm. willing to, like, again, look out for the best of the people that work for them or work with them, that means a lot. And I think that means a lot. And you allow them, you know, your employees and other folks and Dylan and everyone else to be learners in what they do as they go.
I've had a lot of jobs, and let me tell you, that makes a huge difference. I'm pretty sure it makes the difference, but yeah, it makes such a big difference. Not only in, like, the company morale, every aspect of the business is just, it runs better. It just runs smoother.
Well, and you know, and I learned most of this. My grandparents owned grocery stores in Arizona, and I worked for them in the summers, and that's how I learned it. You know, we always say, well, we're a family, and well, not many places that I've worked for, it really is like that. It's kind of, well, you're my family, but you're my boss type of thing. And it can be kind of a family. It's not exactly like a family, but a little bit like it, because like when we had to shut down for COVID and all that stuff, you know, my main concern is, you know, mostly women work for me. They're the heads of their households. They're the sole income earners for those households. If you're a business owner and that wasn't affecting you, how are they going to make it? How are they? If that's not your first concern, then, you know, you shouldn't be in business. If you're just there for the money, I guess is what I'm saying, I have a problem with that, because these are people that, you know, pay their bills, and my business is responsible for them paying their bills,
yeah.
having the money to do it. And it should be taken as a huge responsibility. And I have sleepless nights. You know, are we going to do payroll this week? We've had struggles. And, you know, what's this person going to do? And I think about those things. And my grandparents taught me that, really, is what it was. They would stay up weekends and nights worrying about this employee and that employee. They'd pay their medical bills. And so that was taught to me by my family. And hopefully I'm carrying it over to teach other people the same thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, sure. But compassion is important in business and in life in general.
Yeah.
And so being a compassionate business owner and showing that to your staff and to the community that means a lot.
Yeah.
That really means a lot. So I want to transition a little bit and talk about pecans. Okay.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
First, we have a lot of listeners all over the world.
Here we go.
Here we go. Right. So everyone dig in. What is I keep saying pecan because mm-hmm. I'm a Texas guy and we say that's the right way to say it. But what would you say to our, you know, New England listeners who hopefully will keep listening after this that want to call them pecans?
I would say go ahead and call them that. I went to college in Boston, so I got used to it, and I wouldn't argue with them. No, the actual pronunciation is pecan. A pecan is something you take out into the woods, a little can, and you go to the bathroom in. That's a pecan. One of our employees, actually the my plant manager, Bonnie, calls them, she doesn't call them pecan or pecan.
She has like some weird name for it. Like, I can't even say it.
Pecan. It's like pecan or something. Anyway, it's kind of funny. So the technical, the official way of pronouncing it is pecan. But we still love everybody that calls them pecans.
Sure. Yes, sure. You're wrong, but we still love you.
I've seen t-shirts that, or maybe it was a meme or something that said, this is a pecan, had a little picture of pecan, and this is a pecan. And it'd be a little picture of like a, some kind of aluminum can with the top cut off with urine in it, basically what it was.
Yeah, and I'm originally from New England, so
he's a pecaner.
Yes, I said pecan before, and he was like, and Chris was like, "No, I do not have pecan ridge. I have pecan ridge." I was like, "Yes, sir."
So you were corrected pretty quickly.
Yes, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Here in Texas,
it's the only thing I've been written up for so far.
That is not true.
If that's the worst of your offenses, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay, I just wanted to clear that up because I know like people will read the title of this and be like, pecan ridge. No, it's fine. It's fine.
They can call it whatever they want, but it actually technically is pecan. Yeah.
Good to know. So there's two things that I want to kind of talk about for the the next little while. So the first is I think we'll start with the question I have for Dylan.
Yes.
Because Dylan, if y'all out there don't know, is a social media master these days. He could run a master.
Way too kind.
You're really good at finding funny things to post that are educational, that are, drive people to the business. You're kind of, again, I cannot open up my Facebook without seeing something you've posted in one of the 36 groups you manage. So before doing this, did you have experience in marketing or in social media or any of that? Or are you just like teaching yourself as you go?
Teaching myself as I go. I have no experience at all. Actually, if you really want to know like the God's honest truth, everything I learned is from TV and the Fyre Festival documentary on Netflix. I'm not even joking.
Okay.
Yes. I just like, that is like the two things I use and like, so far, it's been really successful. But honestly, the Fyre Festival on Netflix or documentary on Netflix is actually a masterclass on advertising. It really is, though. Huh. It really is. Because, yeah, I mean, they managed to get so much hype. And they had nothing. They had nothing. And they were, yes, and they made so many people go wild over. I mean, it is just crazy what they were able to pull off. But, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That kind of blew my mind a little bit. I'm like,
I was like, I know you're two curveballs for you.
Well, but you do a great job of, again, Chris mentioned that, he may have seen it on a meme and there's a good chance it's on a meme you found.
Yeah.
So have you found, and I think this is an important just communication point in general.
Yeah.
Have you found that like using lots of humor in your communications is beneficial?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, not only that, it's really just people, I think, conflate positivity with humor. It's not necessarily humor that does it. It's positivity, and when you can do it in a humorous way, that's a kicker.
Okay.
But I think, especially on social media, everyone is just so starved for positivity and not seeing a dumb opinion on something, that whenever you do it consistently, it really does like shine a light in the world.
Okay.
So I think it's just positivity.
Well, and he backs it up with kind of his personality as well,
because,
you and everybody else knows him. So I think they see those and they can just see Dylan saying something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I didn't even know what a meme was before we knew each other. And when I need to find something on Facebook, I literally hand in my phone and say, I don't know anything about any of it. Right? Like, could you find this for me, please? And he does. So, a lot of that's I'm in my 50s. So a lot of that's generational stuff too.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Well, but have you seen, I have a point somewhere I'm going here, talking about social media. So I'm choosing my words here. Oh, I don't want some grumpy old professor to yell at me someday. No, so something we struggle with, I think, in business, in academia, and everything else is telling a good story.
Yes.
Right. And so like some of the message we try, like this podcast and everything else, some of the message we are trying to get across to some of our folks, even at the university, is, okay, yes, you can have the best information in the world, but if you don't present it well, mm-hmm. if you don't present it in a positive way,
exactly,
a funny way, then no one cares.
Exactly.
And so,
and that is just a fact of, I mean, maybe it's of life, but it definitely is a fact of modern life.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I think that's a modern life. That, I think that's a kicker. Education also has become kind of entertainment. I'm not downplaying it. But you always, oh, that's such a barn professor. Oh my gosh. It's like, well, I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to educate you.
Right.
My evolution in teaching, I did learn, I had to change the way I was teaching because people weren't getting it because people are raised different than I was raised. So if I'm teaching, and Dylan's taking a class of mine, if I'm teaching somebody his age, I do teach it different to a group his age than I do to, let's say, a group of older people, somebody my age or something.
Sure.
And I do think the entertainment, and I used to poo-poo it, and now I kind of embrace it because that there's an academic entertainment value to it. I don't even know if that means anything.
No, I understand.
That does catch people's attention, and especially young people's attention, because they were raised different than I was raised.
Yeah.
I wasn't even allowed to watch TV at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We read books and listened to music, and a lot of my friends were like that. And then my nephews that are, you know, around Dylan's age now, they weren't taught the same way I was. So I've had to look at how I teach, even though we're not talking about teaching.
No,
and change it, and even talking to employees.
Yeah.
You know, that's had to change as well. And it's not good or bad. It's just different. And, you know, my mother and I get into it. She's an old teacher. And there should be, you know, it shouldn't be fun. It's, you know, that type of thing.
Learning is not fun.
But it can be. And it can be a lot of fun. I try to get some humor in the classes I still teach. And I think Dylan has taken that. And it's important. And he does it masterfully.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really does.
I appreciate it.
Didn't mean to take up all that time from you. But.
No. But truly. And I think those are all very good points. And like I'm trying to make sure that my little science communication stuff I do stays as, like, I'm on TikTok. I did not see myself at 33 years old having a TikTok. But quite honestly, like, if I want the 18 to 24 year olds, or mm-hmm. even a little bit
yep.
younger, to get some of the information I'm putting out
yep.
there,
that's where they're
yep.
at.
I have to go where they are.
Yep.
Yeah, and people kind of poo-poo social media, but it really is just the public square of, you know, our yep. time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, back when there were castles and everything else, you really did have a public square where everyone just gathered. I mean, literally all day and just chilled mm-hmm. all day and just talked to each other. And that's how you found out, you know, the yep. news, the gossip and everything like that. So it really isn't that new of a concept. It's just in a different form.
Yeah.
Social media isn't really, you know, that like some like, you know, thing that like, you know, corrupts and everything like that. It
sure.
really is just a place for the human experience to exist.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, the 95 Theses, yeah. you know, Martin Luther would have been posting it on Facebook instead of
yeah,
on,
exactly.
you know, on the church exactly. on the church door.
It would have been a Twitter.
So, it really would have been.
And no, that's really an interesting, and just from a business standpoint, like having to, you almost like, I guess maybe where I'm going with this is like, we can't anymore just be one thing.
No.
Right.
Like, we can't just be one thing. And I'm not saying we all have to be all things to all people, because that's
exactly.
that's a losing proposition.
Yes.
And I'm a people pleaser, and I want to be that, oh, I have to make everyone happy, be
yeah.
all things.
Yeah.
But I think that to a certain extent, we have to be willing to adapt and
yeah.
to find new things and change the way that a pecan business is run and all these different things.
If you don't, you die.
Right.
I would not. Pecan Ridge probably, and I'm not exaggerating, probably wouldn't have been open these last 2 years if it hadn't been for Dylan. We had some struggles early on, and Dylan took the social media, which I would not even have known how to do, and ran with it. And that has saved a couple of months, several months, actually. The money that he was able to bring in, you know, through the website and all the markets and stuff, that really did save us.
Yeah.
So you do have to be able to adapt. And, you know, my old thinking, I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work the way if we're just going to do it like this. It has to evolve. And Dylan, I said, evolve it. And he did.
And I think people conflate being authentic with trying new things. Like you said, like I would never expect at 30, whatever you said, I'd be on TikTok.
Yeah.
But that's not you not being authentic, because that's like, you know, when I watch Vikram videos on TikTok, that is authentic Vikram.
Right.
So just because you're on TikTok doesn't mean you're not being authentic.
Right.
It's just a different way of being authentic.
Sure. No, and that's a good, that's really a good point. You just, you take who you are and what you do and apply it in different ways.
Exactly.
I think that's really wise.
And especially something like agriculture, something as boring as pecans.
Yes.
You know,
honest,
what do? We shell pecans, right. You eat pecans, you candy pecans, you make pecan pie. That's pretty much all there is to it. So how do you turn that into something that's like, ooh, let's go to Pecan Ridge, or let's do, you know, we want to see Dylan.
Yeah.
Our pecan tree, you know, it's a pecan, it's a tree.
Yeah.
So how do you turn that to get people interested in it? And you start giving tours. You know, what do you do? And Dylan has taken all that. And we're still, we've got more things coming that I don't even know about yet, with tours and educational things at Pecan Ridge. And he's bringing all that together. And it's just to educate people up about pecans.
Yeah.
And people are loving it.
And that's actually a great segue. Thank you for that. Because I've been thinking for a couple of minutes, all right, what am I going to – but no, that's a great segue. Let's talk – for a few minutes about pecan trees.
Okay, sure.
Because I think people, you made the comment before we started recording that a lot of people around here have them.
Mm-hmm.
They are native to Texas,
mm-hmm.
maybe not this part of Texas as much, but
right.
native to Texas. They're in tons of yards, and people just have no idea what to do with them.
No, they don't.
Like, there's this big freaking tree in my front yard. It makes a mess sometimes. A branch falls off. They don't have to do with it. So can you give us just a... however you want to approach it, but just kind of a crash course in pecan trees.
Sure. Part of the problem living in city limits is water.
Right.
You know, you got to, I have wells at our orchards, so we don't have to pay for the water. The biggest problem in city is you have to pay for the water. A typical pecan tree, and nobody believes me, but you can even Google it, takes between 100 and 200 gallons per day
mm-hmm.
of water. That's about 1.5 to 2 inches, because orchards usually go by the inch, not by the gallons, or you'd be freaking out.
Right, yes.
And there's just no way somebody, you know, somebody can afford 200 gallons per day to water their pecan tree that they're going to get maybe 50 pounds of pecans off of.
Right.
Well, I just tell...
if they have multiple ones.
Yeah. And then, and here in Lubbock, everybody has more than one tree.
Yeah.
So I just watered as much as you possibly can, as much as you can afford. I tell, we have a lot of retirees. Most of our customers are, you know, homeowners. A lot of them are elderly. They've been living in the same house for years. You know, their trees are 30, 40 years old. And they need a lot of water, but they can't afford it. So I just say water them as much as you can. Get a decent tree. My brain just went blank. A fertilizer.
Okay.
Now, pecan trees need zinc.
Okay.
The best way to get them into the tree is spray zinc.
You're right.
It's really the only way to get get it into the tree. You can see a lot of fertilizers that have zinc in them. It works a little bit, but I just tell people get a good, you know, fruit fertilizer or a tree fertilizer and fertilize it. Don't put it right at the base, you know, put it on the drip line
and then
I explain people what the drip line is. And so basic things like that of watering and a little bit of fertilizer and you're going to get a decent. Now, if you're an orchard, you know, it's a whole nother.
Sure.
It's a whole nother ball of wax. But most of our customers, we have a lot of orchards that we shell for, but I don't really need to tell them how to do it.
Right.
But for our mom and pop people, and then you need to trim them. They, you know, pecan trees will thrive if you keep them trimmed up. I don't mean every year, but when there's, you know, the bad stuff, trim them off, and let it grow back and you'll have a good crop. They should produce every year. Most people get either once every 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mainly from, you know, we are having a drought right now in this part of the world. People don't water them enough and they don't fertilize them enough and it gets too hot. And pecan trees actually should be a little more into the east. That's the native Texan pecans. And they've been transplanted here and they do work here very well because, you know, we have a lot of extra water.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, it doesn't really work that well. So water as much as you can, fertilize twice a year, beginning and the end of the spring and fall. And that's pretty much it. That's what I tell our regular customers here.
Okay. That's really interesting. And like I've heard and I know a little bit about pecan trees, but that's never been my like main area of study. So I don't really know. I've heard that you're watering for the next season.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So we're in a drought right now. It hasn't rained. I don't
forever.
It feels like it right now. It feels like it hasn't rained in forever, and like it's never gonna rain again. That's how it feels right now. But so next season, mm-hmm. it's like if you're trying to make a crop next season, especially in a drought, it's important that you're watering
absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely, and yeah, you have to. My two of my orchards, we have three, are going to have zero pecans, and that's because of hail.
Oh man.
Yeah, we had those huge 1-inch, 2-inch hail. Yeah, that wiped us out.
That's terrible.
That's just part of agriculture. That happens to everybody. The farmers, know what I mean. You want to. You're always wanting to. You start worrying about next year while this year's still going on. Yeah. I mean, that's in any agriculture, no matter if it's pecan trees or cotton or corn or whatever it is. You always got to think ahead if you're going to have a crop. Now, if you're a mom and pop, just a tree in your yard, you don't. But the orchards, they're thinking 1, 2, 3 years in advance as well. There's some huge orchards over in Brownfield, and that's where we buy some pecans, and they're also not going to have any this last year.
Wow.
But it's from the hail, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about that.
No.
It's just gone. It's gone.
Yes, right. And we struggle with that at the peach orchard as well.
Yeah.
We take tons of hail damage, you know, and that's every time there's a storm brewing in like May, we're like, oh no,
I know the vineyards around here worry about that as well.
For sure.
Yeah,
it's part of life in this part of the country.
Yeah. It's a huge agriculture community. So everybody knows, everybody gets dinged usually at the same time because the hail kills everybody.
Yeah.
The cotton, the corn, the pecans, peaches, whatever it is, it kills everybody.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. And so how many trees do y'all have at your main shop?
Here at Pecan Ridge, we only have 40.
Okay.
And actually, it's a kind of funny little story. They only put those in. I didn't put them in. They put them in probably about 10 years ago or something like that.
8 or 9, yeah.
People kept coming in and asking where their trees are. So just to shut everybody up, they never even used those trees. This last year's the first crop that's ever been harvested because I started taking care of them.
Right.
They just didn't want to mess with them.
It was just
because they will grow. If you just plant it and let it go, it'll grow here. You won't get a crop, but it'll grow. So we started taking care of them. We had a little crop last year. This year we have no crop. But, we have 40 trees there. Then we have a little one in Rawls, one and one in Abilene as well.
Okay. That's cool. I just, I think, again, people don't know a lot about the pecan tree. It's it's a large tree.
Yeah.
Especially if you let it go, that's a lot of tree.
Yes, it's a lot of tree.
And it needs a lot of water.
Yeah.
I think that's important to know.
Yeah.
Because I know there's at least one person out there asking, okay, I've got one in my front yard, what do I do with it?
Yeah.
So I think that's good information. Fertilize. Needs the zinc to build shells and everything else and to fill the fruit and it needs water.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty basic kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Do y'all do, and this is a question that just popped into my head. Do y'all do like secondary products with your pecans? Do you do like firewood? If like you after you prune through the orchard, do you do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, actually, we try to have as little waste as possible. So the pecan shell that, we shell and get out, there's actually two different textures of them, the coarse and the fine mulch.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it as mulch. It's really, really great for balancing the pH of your soil. Mm-hmm. And of course it's great for critter food, right? Like
I love
them.
Sure.
We actually are talking with a farm right now. They want to soak some of that in milk and then feed it to their pigs for their entire lifetime and see if it adds to the flavor. They're thinking it might add
pecan flavored
bacon. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So we're going to have a Pecan Ridge pig here next season. How cool is that?
That's amazing. I've had pecan smoked bacon. I've never had pecan.
Well, I hadn't either. I'm looking forward to that one.
Bacon.
Yes, right?
Yeah, we try to use as much as we can.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, me too. That's awesome.
A lot of the stuff we give away, because we have so much waste at our place, not from the shells and the shelling, because we do so much that we either sell it or I give it away. We're going to just give it to the pig farmers and just to see what happens if they get us a pig.
Yeah.
And a lot of people use it for landscaping. A couple of the big landscapers here in town buys our shells from us and use it. So we try not to. You can also get pecan oil. I actually do have a pecan oil press, but we don't have a kitchen set up yet. So I do have the press, and basically you just pour the pecans in it, and it's a big machine, and it presses in it. The pecans coming out look like a potato chip.
Yeah. Okay.
Literally. And then you get in the oil, pecan oil is fantastic.
Yes.
Okay. That brings up a really cool point that I, it was in my head earlier, and I'm glad you brought that up. So my master's research was in olives. Uh-huh. I studied South Texas olive production for oil.
Really?
So we got to go down, I guess it's only been like 10 years, but I'm already like, I don't know when it was. I think after my first year of grad school, we got to go down to Carrizo Springs, Texas, which mm-hmm. is like down in the south of San Antonio, Rio Grande Valley, uh-huh. Middle of nowhere, almost to Mexico, Texas, yeah. You know, and go to their harvest festival. And it was really interesting because they have a similar presses. They have uh-huh. a big, you know, yeah. corkscrew press. Yeah. But they go straight from one of the big things with olive oil production. And this is an interesting thing if you're out there listening. The grades of olive oil are based on the amount of time from the tree to the press.
Really?
And yes. So like an extra virgin olive oil is like, I don't remember exactly. It's been a minute, but it's like a number of hours from the time that olive is picked off the tree to the time that it's pressed and pasteurized. They cold pasteurize olive oil because there's all these phenolic compounds, all these antioxidants uh-huh. in the olive oil, which is why people use olive oil for the well, it tastes good, but also right. for the potential health benefits,
yeah, right.
The olea europaeans and the phenolic compounds. As soon as it comes off the tree, they start breaking down. As soon as that fruit is picked, it starts breaking down. So they grade it by like extra virgin is really fast, virgin is slower, and then just like there's two or three other grades.
The other stuff.
I did not know that. That's fascinating.
Hey, Editor Vikram here. Just popping in to say that the grading process is actually a little more complicated than I made it sound. It is influenced by the amount of time from tree to press because the way the polyphenols do start to break down. However, there's other requirements in terms of fat content and antioxidants and other things that are actually in the olive oil that go into the grading process. But it all is very tied up with the amount of time it takes to press the olives and the process by which it's pressed. Okay, back to the episode.
So a lot of times the extra virgin olive oil operations, like if you buy it, there's a press on farm because uh-huh. they'll go straight.
They gotta go.
Yeah. They've got to go fast, or they have to like be able to flash freeze the crop and all this other stuff. So, pecan oil is not something I've ever used, but that I've started hearing more and more about. Mm-hmm. Is that somewhere y'all want to go?
Yeah, we sell pecan oil.
Oh, you already do.
No, we don't make it because we can't right now, but we, The old owners did do that, but Dylan's really taken it and blown it up and really pushed it. And he knows more about the pecan oil than I do. It's got
a
great flash point, better. It's a healthy oil that Dylan talked about.
So, talk about that a little bit. I'm interested in pecan oil.
The smoking point is 470, which is about 120, 130 more than mm-hmm. Olive oil.
Wow, that's high.
Yes, yeah, really high. So you can get a really good sear on the steaks. And then also with pecan oil, which I really like, it picks up the flavors of what you're cooking. So like sometimes with olive oil and other oils, you'll have like kind of like that, you'll be able to taste it at the end just a little bit.
Yeah.
With pecan oil, you don't taste it at all. You taste whatever flavors you're cooking with. So that's really, really cool. And my favorite fact, pecans are the seventh heart healthiest food in the world.
Hmm.
So of all foods of all time, pecans are number seven for most antioxidants, which makes it the healthiest or heart healthiest oil in the world.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And so, like, I know they produce a lot out of Louisiana because there's lots of pecans grown in Louisiana.
I think that's where we get ours now.
Okay.
Yes, Louisiana. Pecan plantation.
Okay. Man, that's cool. That's really cool. I'm glad that came up randomly because I was actually having a conversation with a friend about pecan oil the other day, and they're like, I've never used it. I'm like, I haven't either, but, you know, we have a pecan business here. I wonder if they're, you know, thinking about it. That's really cool.
Yeah. And eventually we do want to have our own brand. We want to, you know, have our own kitchen and stuff, but we just can't do that right now. And so we've got the press. We just can't do anything with it.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Cool. I don't know. I'm just processing all that. There's probably more to say about it, but that's pretty interesting.
Dylan knows more about it than I do, like I said.
But talking about secondary products, I think that's from an agricultural standpoint, mm-hmm. you want to use as much your whatever as you can.
Yes.
So like, you know, with cotton, they sell the lint and then either use the burrs for cottonseed oil or as cattle feed mm-hmm. or as compost.
Yes.
Compost.
And we actually sell cottonseed oil.
Oh, okay.
Locally from here in Lubbock. And
cotton made here.
If you're in agriculture, you have to figure out how to use everything or you're just not going to make it. I mean, Well, I guess you could, but you're not going to make as much. You know, you want to use every part of the plant that if you're harvesting it, whatever it is, you want to be able to use it. And yeah. Smart farmers do that.
And from a, you know, just overall land stewardship and sustainability yep. mm-hmm. standpoint, yeah. you know, the more efficient we can be and the more we can, yeah, because yep. we use our land and we use it hard. But yep. if we can be as, I don't know, as respectful of the space and of the right. The opportunity and blessing we get from being able to farm and being able to do all those things. I think yes. that gives us a different perspective sometimes right. on production and on
yes.
everything mm-hmm. else.
It really does.
So, man, we've already been at this 50 minutes. This is a long one.
I told you we could talk.
I'm totally down for that. I love it. So one of the things that I like to ask my guests at the end of every episode, and I like to surprise them with it Uh-oh. Because it's more fun that way. It's more fun for me that
Let's
way
do
anyway. If there was one piece of advice you could give our listeners, mm-hmm. and that can be about mm-hmm. pecan trees, you've already said water it and put zinc on it, it's good, or just about business or life in mm-hmm. general, what would that be? What would you, if there's something that everyone took home with them today, what would you want that to be?
Oh, mine is definitely, I just be less afraid to take risk. I think there's a lot of opportunity when you open yourself up to risk. And I know it can be scary in all the ways it can be scary. But when you open up yourself to new possibilities, it is absolutely fascinating what God will have planned for you. So just be open to taking risk.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's
man.
A good one. Yeah.
That's really good.
Mine is, if you're going to open a business, triple what you think you might need financially.
okay, minimum. That's good advice.
Minimum.
You know, you sit and you plan and you plan and you plan. This wasn't my first business. My brother and I have had other businesses before, and my family's been in business. Anyway, you never have as much as you think you need. I mean, you always need more than what you think you need. So if you're thinking, especially right now, if you're thinking about opening a business, try to triple what you ever you think you might need. That's seriously good practical advice.
Yeah.
That is like
if you can't triple
right
it, at yeah. least double it. But because it never, all the businesses that I've had, my brother's been in business a long time, grandparent, like I said, you know, you think, okay, this is perfect. This is all I need. This will get me through a year. It never works out that way. Ever, 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 ever works out that
right.
way. So if you're going to go in business, try to get as much capital as you possibly can before you can go into business.
That is yes. really good practical advice. And I know there's at least a few, you know, hopefully a few potential business owners out there thinking about that, yep. that can be, you know, pretty useful for
yep.
them.
Yes.
And so take a risk, but then prepare well for it.
Perfect.
I think that's good. I like
I know
it.
Why we work well together.
You tag team that great. So y'all, man, I really enjoyed that. That was a fun conversation.
Yeah,
it went
same.
Fast.
I told you we could talk a lot.
That is perfect. That's perfect. Where can we find you? Just, you know, plug your stuff. If there's like social media outlets, different
well,
events.
We got all the things,
go
right?
Yeah, hit us with it.
I don't even know what they are, so I'll let Dylan do all this.
Of course, if you want to visit us in store and take a tour of the pecan shelling facility, we're available Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 9 to 2 at 6201 114th Street, right in between Frankfort and Milwaukee. But if you're not in Lubbock, feel free to hit us up online, www.pecanridge.com, where you can find out more about us, or see taste test any of the products that look interesting, and we're on Facebook at Pecan Ridge LBK as well.
Okay.
And that's where you're going to find all the fun stuff.
Lots of fun stuff. Lots of fun stuff. And I'm trying to think. Y'all, is there anything I forgot? Any
honestly, that was make? Awesome, right, though?
Yeah, I thought it was
yes,
great.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for being on. This will come out next week, actually. And so, everyone, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. That was a again, I wish y'all, I kind of wish all of y'all could have been here with us, just sitting out in the sun and or under some trees and
it's really nice.
A beautiful yeah.
and not windy.
No,
and here in Lubbock, that's great.
Which is weird. Yeah. Beautiful Wednesday afternoon. So, y'all take care. We'll be back next week and y'all keep being cool.
So don't forget to go check out pecanridge.com. And again, if you use the promo code PLANTPEOPLE at checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. Thanks so much for listening today. Like I said, I really had fun recording that. It was laid back and a little bit different, but I found it very hopeful and uplifting and encouraging, and I hope you did too. Thanks so much, as always, to the Texas Tech Department of Plant and Soil Science for all the support of this show. We could not do it without their help. And I hope you're enjoying it, and I've certainly enjoyed making it. Again, we are coming up on our one-year anniversary at the beginning of November, so I would really appreciate some ratings and reviews from you. If you've got thoughts on how I could do better, please let me know. And if you're loving the show, go drop a 5-star rating on Apple or CastBox or Podchaser or anywhere else you can. It really means a lot to me, and it really helps us out. Check us out on social media. We're Planthropology pretty much all the places. And get ready for a great episode next week. Next week is actually a pretty moving, heavy one, where I talk with my friend Matt McEwen, who runs a cool program called the Grub Farm. And we talk about everything from getting kids in nature to teaching them about the value of work and preserving the environment, and even a little bit about fire ecology. It's a great one, and I know you'll love it. Thanks for listening, and get ready for the Curiosity Cake promo starting in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I was always one of those curious kids. I had the chemistry set, a microscope, a telescope. I would take my toys apart to see how they worked. And now that I'm a grown-up, I still have that huge sense of curiosity. If you too are an adult who was a curious kid, then Curiosity Cake is made for you. I'm your host, Lee Delaney. Join me as I talk to the best minds from academia and elsewhere to bring you accessible and engaging conversations across a wide range of topics with no prior knowledge required. I'll be asking questions such as, can nuclear fusion become a viable source of sustainable clean energy? Is it possible to create careers that fit our interests and personalities? And how can we know how to eat well with so much conflicting nutrition information? You can enjoy a slice of Curiosity Cake by subscribing on your favorite podcast app or via the website curiositycake.co.uk. All you need is a cup of tea and a fork.